the serious side of Stan Freberg, more or less. That's our focus on this week's broadcast of Echoes of a Century. I'm King David McKenzie.
From Hollywood, the CBS Radio Workshop.
Well, from where we sit in this air-conditioned, glassed-in control room high above the floor on the Convention Coliseum, it would appear that Eustace J. Favorite Son has the nomination all but sewed up. He's only 10 votes short of the needed 667, and New Mexico's 16 votes can put him over the top. The roll call is about to continue, so now back to Sam Pierce on the convention floor.
Sam Pierce once again. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the final moments of this 1964 convention are really something. Well, Larry Thor is here on the floor with me. Larry, do you have a comment?
Yes, I do, Sam Pierce. It seems to me that the final moments of this 1964 convention are really something.
That's how I would have put it, Larry Thor. Chairman Cal Porter is pounding the gavel for silence now, and it's my guess New Mexico will throw her entire 16 votes for Eustace J. Favorite Son. Right, Larry Thor?
Right, Sam Pierce.
The convention will please be in order. Whereas in previous years, many delegates complained that they did not get to wave a sign in front of the cameras and thereby missed the opportunity of obscuring the television audience's view, this year, all delegates without signs to hold have been given balloons on long strings. This way, everybody gets to hold something. But this morning, two states got into a fight over civil rights, and Alabama broke an Oregon balloon with a lighted cigar. Now, balloon breaking is the kind of thing that can split our party. So let's have respect for the other fellow's balloons, at least in front of the television cameras. Now, New Mexico.
New Mexico! 16 votes!
Mr. Chairman, New Mexico, home of the pinto bean and the land of 10,000 lakes, proudly cast its 16 votes. In a moment, the result of those votes. But first, Mother and Dad, thinking of sending the kids to camp this year, don't you do it. Bring the whole family to fabulous, colorful New Mexico, home of the pinto bean and land of 10,000 lakes. Say, you can bet your bottom dollar.
Mr. Chairman, I rise to point of order.
May I remind the chair that under the unit rule, I have a full minute for my state commercial.
That is true, but your slogan is home of the pinto bean and land of enchantment, not land of 10,000 lakes.
Mr. Chairman.
The chair recognizes Minnesota.
Land of 10,000 lakes is Minnesota's slogan.
I know, but I like it.
All right, New Mexico, that will do.
No, if I can't have land of 10,000 lakes, I don't want home of the pinto bean.
Oh, well, then take home of the jumping frog. That hasn't been used.
Mr. Chairman!
Chair recognizes California.
Before the chair gives away jumping frogs, I would like to call attention to the fact that the original jumping frog, which Mark Twain immortalized, was an amphibian from Calaveras County, which is in California!
The chair recognizes the delegate from Missouri.
May I remind the delegate from California that the birthplace of Mark Twain was the little town of Hannibal on the banks of the Mississippi in the great and glorious state of Missouri.
Order! All right, Missouri, sit down! New Mexico won't use your old frog.
I will if I want to. I got to where I like it now.
New Mexico, home of the pinto bean and a jumping frog.
New Mexico? New Mexico, you can just hand me your balloon.
The delegate of New Mexico is visibly shaken by the chairman's rebuke. He is relinquishing his balloon now. Well, this is a tense moment, ladies and gentlemen. Anything can happen now. Anything.
Mr. Chairman, are we here to squabble over slogans or nominate a candidate for the presidency of the United States of America?
First things first. Now, New Mexico. How about home of the Western Meadowlark? That has a nice sound.
Mr. Chairman, the Western Meadowlark is the state bird of Montana.
Well, you could share your bird with New Mexico. That's the American way.
I won't do it.
All right, then. Here, New Mexico, here's a dandy. New Mexico. Overflowing with the milk of human kindness.
Point of order. Point of order. Mr. Chairman, Wisconsin is America's dairyland.
Oh, sit down, Wisconsin.
Milk.
Sit down. Sit down. Now this convention will come to order, or I will take away all of your Mouseketeer hats.
Hey, what'd you turn the set off for? That was Stan Freeberg kidding the political convention.
I don't care. He makes me mad. He doesn't take anything serious.
Yes, he does. That's satire.
Satire? What's satire?
In the next half hour, we will attempt to answer that question as CBS Radio presents the CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Tonight, Colloquy 3, an analysis of satire. What is satire? How does it differ from wit, from humor, from criticism? Is it all of these or none of these? To help us answer this question, the CBS Radio Workshop is proud to present one of the most penetrating young satirists of our time, the Capitol recording star, Stan Freeberg.
Thank you very much and good evening. Well, what is satire? That's a good question. Well, there are all kinds of satire. We opened the show tonight with a political satire, for example,
and it was an outrage to right-thinking Americans everywhere.
Well, just a minute. You can't come bursting in here.
Oh, yes, I can. I am the censor.
Oh, you mean the network censor?
Oh, no, 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 no. Censor with a capital C. I represent society.
With a capital S?
No, lowercase. I represent public opinion. There are some things too serious to be kidded, too sacred. Big business, labor, the farmer, the American way, mom, politics.
What's the matter with kidding politics?
You can't afford to offend one party or the other.
Oh, but that little exercise in rodomontade was not directed at any political party. I was only poking fun at the absurdity of all conventions.
Well, maybe. But you offended the states. The idea, having the delegates carry balloons.
Tell me something. Did you watch the conventions recently?
Of course, and very carefully, I can tell you.
Well, and honestly, didn't they look a little like big rowdy kids? Sort of a ding-dong school with delegates?
That's a slanderous statement. I might even say a dangerous thought.
Oh, come on. All I suggested was this could be a convention of 1964 if they keep on at the rate they're going.
What do you hope to gain by such impertinence?
Gee, frankly, I don't know, but I can't help myself. A lot of things and a lot of people strike me as being funny, that's all. And by holding up a satirical mirror to them, maybe in a small way I can help them to laugh at themselves. And then everybody might be a little wiser. And even maybe a little happier.
Yes, but you went too far when you put Mouseketeer's hats on the delegates. Now, that is defamation.
No, it's not. It's all in fun. Where's your sense of humor? Besides, our political conventions are nothing more than glorified Mickey Mouse cartoons anyway.
Watch your tongue. Watch your tongue.
That's not my tongue. That's Will Rogers' tongue.
Yes, I don't believe it. Will Rogers was a great American. He wouldn't have said anything like that.
Well, gee, I'm sorry to argue with you, sir, but in September 1932, he did say it. Listen, this is what Will said.
Well, our national political convention, if you have ever attended one or heard it over the radio, are nothing more than glorified Mickey Mouse cartoons and are solely for amusement purposes.
Unquote.
I just can't believe that 100% American like Will Rogers could have
gotten away with it.
Shocking. Simply shocking. Why, it verges on the seditious.
Look, if you don't mind, I'd like to get this show on the road.
All right, go right ahead. Please. But I warn you, I'll be making notes of everything you say.
Fine, be my guest.
May I borrow your pen?
Oh, certainly. Here you are.
Oh, I hate ballpoints.
Aren't you afraid you'll offend the ballpoint people?
Don't you get smart with me, young man.
All right, sorry. Now, where was I? Oh, yes, what is satire? Well, it's a lot more than pointless fun-poking. Satire is criticism, first, last, and always. But criticism disguising itself in the bright robes of barbed wit. The jester may insult the king, so long as he does it with a laugh. So criticism, arm in arm with humor, glides confidently past the censor.
Well, you're not gliding past me, young man.
I know. Satire is as old as man's pomposity. More than 2,000 years ago, Juvenal pierced the stuffed togas of ancient Rome with the same weapon Alexander Pope used to clip the powdered periwigs of 17th century London or Ogden Nash to puncture the tinsel bubbles of Park Avenue's pretensions. But long before these viewers were alarmed, there was a playwright named Aristophanes, a Greek. He didn't think much of the works of another playwright named Aeschylus. In fact, he seems to have come to the conclusion that Aeschylus was one Greek who didn't have a word for it. At least Aristophanes wasn't bearing any gifts when in his great satire, The Frogs, he had this to say of Aeschylus.
I know him. I've seen him years ago, wooden mouthed. No door, no bolt, no bridle to his tongue. A torrent of wild bombast. Intelligible? Not one line.
24 centuries later, a contemporary satirist felt the same way about rock and roll.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
All right, hold it, you guys. This is a rhythm and blues number. You gotta be careful or somebody liable to understand what you're singing about. You want that to happen?
No.
Well, then you gotta talk unintelligible like me, right, Stella?
You said it!
Okay. Now, you guys want to sell a few records?
Yeah.
Well, then stick some old rags in your mouth and take a guess from the top, okay?
Okay.
I don't understand the words now. Real mumbling, huh? Life will be a dream. It will be fine to take you up with her.
Intelligible? Not one line. But satire's weapon is the same, exaggeration. There was another top tune a while back that came marching out of my radio so often I began to think my set had been made in Texas by Texas. Remember? Got so the only place you could escape it was diving for abalone in the Straits of Juan de Fuca. So fearful of being snare drummed to death, I rushed to the studio and recorded this.
There's the yellow rose in Texas that I am gonna say. Nobody else could miss her, not half as much as me. She tried to go and left a part of me. Oh, that's just a shade loud on the snare drum.
Hey, what's the idea of turning it off?
I warn you, and you've gone too far.
Oh, please.
That is a direct insult to the Lone Star State, to say nothing of Southern womanhood and the memory of the boys in gray.
You think maybe I should have cleared it first with the state capitol at Austin, huh?
They would never have given you permission.
See what I mean? You see what we're coming to? It won't be long before you'll have to carry a license to laugh.
Exaggeration again?
You think so, huh? Listen, before I was allowed to laugh at Jack Webb, I had to get his written permission. And the only reason I ever got it is that Jack's shirt is not stuffed. He thought this was funny.
The legend you are about to hear is true. Only the needle should be changed to protect the record.
This is the countryside. My name is St. George. I'm a knight. Saturday, July 10th, 8:05 p.m. I was working out of the castle on the night watch when a call came in from the chief. A dragon had been devouring maidens. Homicide. My job. Slay him.
You call me, chief?
Yeah, it's the dragon again, devouring maidens. The king's daughter may be next.
Mm-hmm. You got a lead?
Nothing much to go on. Say, did you take that .45 automatic into the lab to have him check on it?
Yeah. You were right.
I was right?
Yeah. It was a gun. 820.
Do you really think you can get away with that?
Why not?
It makes fun of the police. And the police preserve law and order. And anyone who is against law and order is against America.
Oh, come on.
However, no good American would buy such a scurrilous record.
But more than a million of them already have. Maybe we better call them back.
Well, it's anti-British, too.
I'll bite why.
It lampoons St. George, the patron saint of England.
You don't leave me much to satirize.
That's not my problem. There's got to be a censor to keep you fellows in line. There always has been.
Maybe so, but he hasn't always been as tough as you are. Just this year, the world lost a great satirist who knew the bitterness which is the lot of a man in mid-century America who refuses to take things too seriously. You remember his acid sarcasm?
California is a great place to live if you're an orange.
The biting wit of Fred Allen was finally suffocated in a society where slapstick is king and where it is all right for a man to take a pratfall as long as he falls on his own prat. But nothing was sacred to Fred Allen, from network vice presidents to Mom herself.
For 20 years, my mother kept a light burning in the window for me. When I came home, my mother gave me a royal welcome and a gas bill for $729.
Can you guess who got sore this little interchange?
Well, Mr. Cassidy, what is that ladder you have there?
I'm going over to Sweeney's for dinner.
And you have to carry a ladder?
The dining room table is too high. You can't sit on chairs. Everybody eats on a ladder.
Why is the dining room table so high?
Sweeney is a mounted cop. He always rides into dinner on his horse.
Oh?
Sweeney never uses a napkin. He wipes his hands on the back of his horse. There's so much food on the back of Sweeney's horse, he has mice under his saddle. Goodbye, dear.
Well, who do you suppose beefed about that innocuous scene? The mounted police? The American Society of Ladder Manufacturers? Mice? No, the Irish. Or at least a small, militant, vociferous, and humorless group of Irishmen. So finally, Ajax Cassidy was written out of the show. It seems to me that today only two mediums remain where the satirist may operate with the widest latitude. Books and the theater. Elsewhere, there are restrictions of one kind or another. Even in phonograph records, which sometimes end up in locked vaults instead of music store shelves. Here's part of a satire which Dawes Butler and I wrote, but never recorded, and which you are about to hear for the first and last time.
In the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on a train of the lonesome kind, well, away, 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 gee whiz, it's a nice day to get a good night's sleep, lad.
That's right, Arthur.
It's a pretty tie you're wearing.
That's right, Arthur. That's right, Arthur.
Well, I just cleared my throat, is all. Say, I was over to the Douglas factory the other day. They had a 1 cent sale. You buy one DC-3 for $100,000, you get the other one for a penny. I think you folks can still get in on it if you hurry right over.
That's right, Arthur.
Say, how about a tune from Frank? You want to sing Frank?
Yes, I do, and my name is Frank.
Oh, it's Frank as far as I'm concerned.
Frank!
Say, guess who I had warming up in the audition pen this morning?
Who?
Morton Downey.
Call me Frank!
Okay, all those in the cast who want to see my new Honolulu movies, hold up your leg iron.
There isn't time, Arthur. The program's almost over.
Oh, what a shame. Well, I think I got time for one joke. You see this ukulele? They bought it with no strings attached. What's that? What's that noise?
It was me, Arthur. I was drinking a glass of noodle soup when you told that last joke. I wasn't able to laugh in time, so I did the next best thing. I gargled.
See, that's thinking on your feet. Only the quick thinkers stay with me. Hey, you with the freckles, you're fired. Oh, that's me. I'm looking in the mirror.
That's right, Arthur.
We'll see you Monday, folks. If you want to have some fun over the weekend, get out and build your own airstrip. It's more fun than a barrel of monkeys.
Sing it, Arthur.
In the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on a train of the lonesome kind.
Ah, the censor's still with us, huh?
Oh, very much so. Oh, very funny, very funny.
I thought you'd be gone, but you liked it, huh?
Oh, indeed, I did.
No comment, no cuts? No blue pencil?
Well, no, not really. Now, of course, in all honesty, I must say, I think that last joke was a wee mite suspect.
What joke was that?
The one about the ukulele with no strings attached.
What's suspect about that?
Well, it does seem to infer that Hawaiians are not above indulging in sharp business practices, such as the sale of stringless ukuleles.
Oh, I see.
But then we must be lenient.
I hadn't noticed.
After all, our ancestors in Connecticut were alleged to have sold wooden nutmegs from time to time. So we can afford to be lenient.
Lenient, huh? Mm. Well, that's a step in the right direction. Now, tell me, Mr. C.
Centaur is the name.
Pardon me. Do you consider hi-fi enthusiasts sacred cows?
Hi-fi enthusiasts sacred cows? I don't even know what they are.
Well, then I can speak freely.
Radio station WHIFIFM, serving the greater Milltown area, is once more proud to bring you at this time your weekly high fidelity forum of the air. And here is your moderator, Feedback Frugal.
Yes, thank you. Well, every week at this time, I have to ask all you people listening on anything less than a 15-inch speaker with an 8-inch tweeter to tune out, please. We don't mean to be undemocratic, but we're a select group, and we can't have just anybody listening. Thank you, so get out, please. Well, tonight our panel looks a little bit like who's who in hi-fi. To my right, Mr. H.H. Horn, president of the Summit Ridge Louder and Louder Club. Mr. Horn? Mr. Horn?
And to my right, Mr. Dacron Grillcloth, editor of Assemble It Yourself magazine.
Thank you, and good evening. And on my right, a very charming teenager, Miss Rhoda Mae Flogg of the West Branch Falls branch of the Johann Sebastian Bach fan club. I believe that's the inscription on your windbreaker, Miss Flogg.
I hope your ears are better than your eyes. It says, "Don't knock Bach." That's the slogan of our club.
Oh, that's the slogan.
Yeah, we have jerseys, too, that say, "Every toccata is worth a few."
Fine. Thank you, Miss Flogg, for the plug. Well, that's our panel. Now, first, we'll play just a teeny bit of a brand new LP recording and see who'll be the first to identify it. Here we go.
I think you'll find it works better if you remove the record jacket first.
Oh, I'm so sorry. My mistake. Here we go. Dirty jacket. Well, there we are. Now try and identify this. Well, that's about enough of that, I guess. Oh, sorry. Well, my arm slipped. I'm sorry. Now, do you know who that was? H.H. Horn, Eddie. Stand up.
Well, that was played over a Pimlington amplifier model 220.
Right so far.
With a Feely preamp and Magnus torn arm.
What do you mean a Feely preamp? That had over 1.6% hum. You can't get that kind of distortion out of a Feely.
My dear Miss Flug, I can hear up to 20,000 cycles.
All right. Afraid Miss Flug has got you there, H.H. It was a Murdoch Jr. with over 2% hum. Now, what about the turntable, Mr. Grillcloth?
Yes, well, it has quite a bit of rumble in it. I think it was the new Murdoch just on the market.
Right you are. Do you think it'll sell 200,000?
No. They have quite a few bugs in them yet.
I got a Murdoch. It doesn't have any bugs.
What? Well, they've got a rumble like a cement mixer.
Well, sure they do if you don't use a foam rubber spindle adapter.
All right. Does anybody recognize the music?
Tell you the truth, I wasn't listening to the music.
Me either.
Well, no matter. Now we come to our contest. If you can guess the sound, you win a life-size, inflatable, latex rubber Liberace. He comes with his arms extended, ready to be blown up and set down at your own piano. Oh,
damn.
Yeah, now what familiar sound is this? Listen. Well, I don't see any hands. That was Benny Goodman in a skin diver suit, 20 feet underwater, playing Danny Boy in a kelp bed.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you should have had that. Well, now one more, just quickly here. Recognize that sound?
I think that was a... I give up.
What was that?
That was King Farouk in a skin diver suit, 20 feet underwater, applauding Benny Goodman.
Oh, well, if you'd played that on something beside a lousy Murdoch turntable without all that rumble, I think I would have...
lousy Murdoch? I'd like to hear your turntable.
All right, Miss Plug. You'll have an opportunity right now. Mr. Grillcloth has assembled his home hi-fi kit here in the studio, and we're all going to get a little listen, right, Doctor?
Yes. As advertised in our magazine, Assemble It Yourself. Now, of course, in order to prepare for our kit, you have to rip out all the walls in the interior of your house.
I see.
Next, our acoustical walls go up in sections.
Prefabricated.
More or less. One wall is solid tennis balls. The other is asbestos. The third, wet bathing suits. And the fourth, a sort of foam rubber bas-relief mural of the Pickham sisters in repose.
Some acoustics, Liza. What about equipment?
Well, I use 5 21-inch speakers in the ceiling, as you can see here. I have it all set up there. Plus a 10-foot horn enclosure in each corner. I have a Stylemaster preamp and a Fomroy turntable.
Oh, the worst one he could have picked.
Listen, madam, people who own Murdoch turntables should not...
All right, now, how much does all that equipment cost? I know our listeners will be anxious.
Yes, well, I'll tell you.
Find out, please.
Yes, please, I'll tell you. $5,499.50 takes it home. Of course, the cost of building the railroad spur right to your house, which is essential, is not included.
Not included in the price. Well, could we hear a little music through your system? I see you have it all set up.
No. No, I'm afraid it wasn't designed for this studio.
Oh, that's a shame.
No, the room won't stand the stress.
Oh, I think it would, but I'm sure our listeners would have enjoyed hearing it.
I would have enjoyed hearing
it. No, this way I don't have to hear that more than 5% turntable rumble in that lousy farm noise.
Just a minute, Mr. Smart
Aleck.
Here, Mr. Blonde, put your windbreaker back on, please.
All right, you want to hear a little hi-fi, eh? Well, listen to this.
Concludes our weekly High Fidelity Forum of the Air. Now back to the frothy beat of Claude Hopper and his boys.
Well, this quite personal analysis of satire may have given you some of you the impression that I consider myself the last survivor of an already vanished race. Nothing could be further from the truth. There is still hope for laughter in America, for there are still satirists in America. We're a hardy species as difficult to extinguish as liberty itself. Our names are familiar and our lust for laughter cannot be discouraged. You may think of us as cartoonists, writers, comics perhaps, but we are all fundamentally satirists, from Chaucer to James Thurber, from Molière to S.J. Perelman, from George Bernard Shaw to Dorothy Parker, Al Capp, Voltaire, Sid Caesar, Groucho Marx, Bob and Ray, Walt Kelly's Pogo, and Jonathan Swift's Lilliput. The list would outrun the time we have left. But all of us, all have this in common. In seeking to blow away mankind's absurdities on a gust of ridicule, we hope to make mankind's burden a little easier to bear. Before you reach for that blue pencil, stop and think. Can you imagine life without a laugh?
You have just heard the CBS Radio Workshop production of Colloquy 3, an analysis of satire, starring the Capitol recording artist Stan Freberg, and produced and directed in Hollywood by William N. Robeson. Colloquy 3 was written by Mr. Freberg and Mr. Robeson, with music by Lynn Murray. Included in the cast were June Foray, Dawes Butler, Sam Pierce, Larry Thor, Parley Bear, Alan Reed, and Bill Thompson. Next week from New York, the workshop will present the radio premiere of The Hither and Thither of Danny Dither, a modern morality play in which a very young angel upsets a celestial efficiency expert's efforts to streamline heaven. Stay tuned for 5 minutes of CBS News to be followed over most of these same stations by My Son Jeep. And don't forget, CBS. Caution before speed. This is the CBS Radio Network.
A 1956 broadcast of the CBS Radio Workshop, on which Stan Freberg explains the nature of satire and offers quite a bit of his own satirical work in the process. This was before Freberg wrote and recorded one of the most serious satire records ever, Green Christmas, with dollar symbols replacing the S's in Christmas, as an attack on the commercialization of the Christian holiday. That record remains one close to Freeburg's heart, even if ironic in that Freeburg would leave active recording in about a year or so to build another career in devising comic TV and radio commercials. The CBS Radio Workshop we just heard was not the most serious Freeburg got on radio in the 50s. On the April 20th, 1958 broadcast of the CBS radio series Suspense, Freeburg became one of the more loathsome characters of his career as the murderer in frantic search of an after-the-fact alibi in Alibi Me.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
One of the most unpredictable things about this business of entertainment is talent. We've seen singers become actors. Example, Frank Sinatra. And actors become singers. Example, Jeff Chandler. Steve Allen composes music. Ernie Kovacs writes a novel. Jackie Gleason conducts an orchestra. And now we present the latest talent turnabout, Stan Freeburg, satirist, whom you are about to hear in a new identity, Stan Freeburg, actor. Listen, listen then as Mr. Freeburg stars in Alibi Me.
And now, Alibi Me, starring Stan Freeburg. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
This time it's a showdown. I took all I'm going to take from Julie. Tough enough to hustle a buck even without interference from him. This time it's a showdown. For real. Julie, I want to talk to you.
But look at you. No manners. No knock on the door. No could I come in. No good afternoon. No manners. No class. Always on the muscle.
I want to talk to you.
A little more relaxative with a voice. This ain't no candy store in Brownsville.
Now listen, Julie.
Didn't you hear what I said? Keep it quiet. Keep it class.
I want to know what's the big idea, you hear me? I just come from Pitkin Avenue. There ain't a candy store. There ain't a pool room. There ain't a bar that'll handle my punch boards anymore. Not one. We now take from Julie, they said.
They said correct.
But that's my territory. I build up the punch board business there.
I know. I watched. You hustled good. You built it up real nice for me, and I appreciate it. I already sent you the biggest lollipop in town. The biggest lollipop in town for the town's biggest sucker.
Julie, I'm warning you.
You're warning me what? What'll you do? Give me a double whammy, like in the funnies? Ever since we was kids, you hate me, I hate you, and it's like a kind of mutual life insurance.
That punch board business is mine. I need it. I need that dough.
You need dough? I'll tell you what. Here's a half a buck. Run down, get me a corned beef sandwich, and keep the change. Here, catch.
Julie. Julie, I told you I...
Look at the face on him. If looks could kill, huh, kid?
I'm not kidding, Julie.
Now put that phone down, Georgie.
No.
Put it down, kid. Now remember Larkin. 6 o'clock, I got to report to Larkin on my parole. They're going to know you done it. Georgie, Larkin is going to know it. Georgie!
That does it. No pulse? Nothing. Just one stinker less than we were out. I looked down at Julie and I remember standing next to him in Larkin's office in a precinct station house years ago. And Larkin saying,
"If one of you punks is ever knocked off, my first suspect will be the other. I better have a good alibi, whichever one of you does it. Because I'm warning you now, once I get you down to headquarters, you're a hot seater."
I need an alibi. A good alibi. How much time do I have to set one up? Let's see, 4:10. And at 6, Julie's supposed to report to Larkin. Till 6. Okay, that's 1 hour and 50 minutes. For an alibi, I need people. Who'll alibi me? Who? Leo. The bartender down at the Shamrock. He's the one. He'll alibi me. Good old Wheel.
Georgie! Oh, Georgie, Lord love you. Boy, you're a sight for sore eyes. Hey, what do you have, huh? Just name it, it's on the house.
Scotch. Scotch.
Sure.
Leo,
yeah, boy?
We've known each other a long time, yes?
I hate to think of the years as fast as we met. I'm getting old, Georgie, old.
Not too old to remember a couple of favors I done for you.
Georgie, boy, not if I was to live to be 100. Hey, here, drink hearty, huh?
Thanks. Look, I want you to do a little something for me.
Oh, well, look, kid, I'm a little short right now.
No, it ain't money. It's just, well, in case you should be asked, I've been sitting here since 3:30, huh?
Yeah? Why?
What's the difference, why?
Anybody special you want me to say it to?
You gonna do it or no?
Well, look, Georgie, I got a right to know when I'm getting into. You want me for an alibi? I want to know why.
Well, let's not make a production out of it. Chances are you won't be asked. But if you are, I've been here since 3:30, you know what I mean? Okay?
Would Lieutenant Larkin maybe be one of the ones who might ask?
Could be.
Look, Georgie, you want money? I'll find you money. I don't know where, but I'll find it. You want food? I'll feed you. You want clothes? Just say the word, huh? But if Larkin is looking for you, I ain't alibiing you.
In a moment, we continue with the second act of Suspense. Memo on medals. Interesting information about our military awards and decorations. Campaign medals were authorized by Congress in 1905 for all officers and men engaged in specified wars and military action, including such widely divergent battles as the Civil War in the United States and the Boxer Rebellion in China. The Navy and Marine Corps have a special Manila Bay medal for members of the United States Asiatic Squadron under command of Commodore George Dewey in May of 1898. The Haitian campaign of 1915 is commemorated with a medal, as is the Santo Domingo expedition, which suppressed a revolt in that country and preserved order during elections in 1916. The Army has its Mexican Service Medal for those involved in any of several expeditions or engagements from April 12, 1911 through June 16, 1919. There is also the Army of Cuban Pacification Medal for United States troops who, from October of 1906 to April of 1909, helped establish a stable government in that island nation. The Victory Medal was initially awarded to all United States service personnel in World War I expeditionary forces, including, for the first time, women serving in the military unit. There is a story behind every American medal, a proud story of devotion to country and unselfish service to keep it strong and free. And now, starring Stan Freberg, Act Two of Alibi Me.
It's 4:25. Got only 95 minutes left till 6 o'clock. When Julie don't show, Larkin goes looking. First for Julie, then for you. You gotta be ready for Larkin when he finds you, and you gotta have a pretty sensational alibi. You won't settle for less. Not him. Think, Georgie, think. Think who you know. Who are your friends? Georgie, think. Who? You see? It works. A second thought that comes to you. Joni, that too. Good old Joni. She'll be your alibi. She's crazy about you. Always has been. Ever since that day up at Bear Mountain. Oh, let her be in. Please let her be in. I'll never ask nothing again. Just let her.
Well, look what the cat dragged.
Hello, Joni, baby.
I shouldn't talk to you, Georgie. I really shouldn't. It's more than 2 months.
You want to know why? You begin to mean too much to me, kid. So stay away from her, I says to myself. Just don't ever see her. she'll wear off, you know what I mean? But I was wrong, Joni. You mean more to me now than ever. I couldn't hold out no longer. That's why I'm here.
Oh, Georgie, baby, don't ever stay away again. No matter what the reason, don't ever stay away from me.
I'm back for good.
Oh, it's been terrible without you. All the time singing the blues, not feeling like going out or seeing anybody.
Well, that's all over now. You know what? We're going to celebrate. Tonight, we're going out into town. Dinner, a show, dancing afterward. Crazy, huh?
I got a new number I've been dying to wear.
Good, good. By the way, sugar, anybody been here today?
No, not a soul. I was all alone, feeling just awful until you came.
Joni, look, in case anybody asks you, not that anybody's likely to, but in case they should, you know what I mean? Do me a favor. Will you tell them I was here with you all day?
I'll tell the world you were here with me. I'll shout it from the rooftops. I don't care who hears it. I love you, Georgie. I just love you, love you, love you.
Yeah, me too. But look, Joni, in case anybody wants you to be definite, will you say I was here since 3:30 and stick to it, no matter what? 3:30?
I'll say I was with... Wait a second. What are you trying to pull?
Relax, Joni, relax.
No, Georgie.
What's the matter, kid?
What's the matter? Plenty. Plenty's the matter. You dirty, no good, miserable son
of a... Joni, now listen to me.
I'm beginning to get it. Trying to sucker me to give yourself an alibi.
Joni, stop yelling. Listen to me. What I said is true. I need you.
Sure you do. So I'll say you were here with me since 3:30. You'll get no alibi from me, Mr. Wise Guy. Now pick yourself up out of that chair and get out of here.
How do you like that? You do things for people all your life, and when you want something from them, an alibi, for instance, what do you get? Nothing. That Leo, that Joni, I'll fix them when they get out of this. How do I get out? Only 1 hour and 5 minutes left before Julie's due to see Lieutenant Larkin, and he ain't gonna make the meet. Only 65 minutes. Who is it to give you an airtight, ironclad, cement foundation alibi? Think hard, baby. Who's around town? Who's left? Timmy. Dope, you should have thought of him first. Timmy, laying there in the hospital, of course. Good old Timmy.
Georgie. Hey, it's good to see you.
Hi, Timmy. Look, 100%. Sorry, I didn't have time to bring candy or flowers, you know what I mean? How you doing?
Oh, not bad, not bad. At least I'm alive. Doctor said it was a miracle. How's things with you?
Tim, I'm leveling with you. I come up by the back stairs. I didn't want no one to see me.
Oh, yeah? In a spot, Georgie?
I need an alibi for this afternoon. Since 3:30.
Oh, you got it. You got it. In this private room. Nobody comes near it. Nurses, orderlies, I don't come unless I give out a yell. And I can have visitors any time I like. No one was here all day.
Gee, Timmy, I'll never forget you for this.
You know, you've got one of the oldest alibis in the world. You were sitting up with a sick friend. Anybody doubts it, you send them to me.
Shows you. You never know who your friends are till you're in a jam.
I'll have a nurse come in so she can see you. And then you take the elevator down and ask some dumb questions so the operator will remember you.
Boy, you don't miss a trick, do you? Thanks again, Tim.
I'll ring for her now. Georgie.
What is it?
My ticket.
Tim, what is it? You want a drink of water? Timmy. Timmy. Tim. Don't die now. Tim, answer me. Say something, please. He's dead. My alibi is dead. I'm sunk. It's 5:06 and I'm sunk. In 10 minutes listening, lurking, looking for me, and I got no alibi. So I come home. So I'm walking up the stairs. And I hear a sound. My landlady, Mrs. Ettinger, is nailing down linoleum in the hallway. Good old Mrs. Ettinger.
Oh, hello, Georgie. You just come in?
Yeah, but, if anybody's to ask you, Miss Ettinger, especially Larkin, you tell him I've been in all afternoon. Understand?
Larkin? Lieutenant Larkin?
Yeah.
Well, I can't do that, Georgie. I won't lie to that cop.
Oh, yes, you will. You'll tell Larkin I'm in my room all day.
No, I won't.
Mrs. Ettinger, you don't tell Larkin I'm in all day? I tell him about Charlotte.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't, Mrs. Ettinger?
Please, Georgie, I don't want no trouble.
Listen, you'll be in plenty of trouble if Larkin hears about your daughter lifting a fur jacket right out of a department store.
I made Charlotte give it back. I marched her into the store myself. We give it back to the manager.
Sure you did. But a crime's a crime, whether a store prosecutes or not.
Oh, Georgie, please, she's only 15. She's a good kid. Her life would be ruined. You wouldn't tell me.
Now, Mrs. Ettinger, what's there to cry about? I'll keep my mouth shut just like you want. And you'll open your mouth just like I want, and everything will be fine. If Larkin asks you, I wasn't out of my room all afternoon. Okay?
You won't tell him about Charlotte?
It's up to you, Mrs. Ettinger.
All right, Georgie. All right. I'll say you was in all day.
And there's my alibi. Safe, sealed, and delivered. The best alibi in the world. 6:15. It won't be long now. I gotta watch myself when Larkin's here. Just the right attitude. Not too anxious. Not too casual. Just right. Yeah? Who is it?
Open up, Georgie. It's me, Larkin.
Lieutenant Larkin? Well, well, well. What a surprise. And to what do I owe this great pleasure?
Remember I once told you, Georgie, if anything happened to Julie or to you, my first pickup would be the other one.
I remember. So what? Yeah. Oh, you mean Julie is...
He's been made dead.
No kidding. Well, what do you know? And you've come to offer me your shoulder to cry on.
You're not surprised.
I'm not the only guy who hated Julie, you know. Tell you what, let me know who did it. When you find out, I'll contribute a sawbuck to his defense.
Save your money, Georgie. You might need it.
Yeah? How come?
Remember I told you at the same time you'd better have a good alibi? Because once I got you down to headquarters, I'd prove you did it.
The words strike a bell.
Give, Georgie. Where were you today?
I was nowhere.
That's a fact.
That's a fact. I was right in here all afternoon.
Can you prove it?
Well, it ain't easy to prove you were somewhere alone all day.
Can you prove you were here?
Well, I didn't see anybody except... Oh, yeah. Mrs. Ettinger, my landlady.
Yeah? All right. Let's hear her version.
All right. Mrs. Ettinger? Mrs. Ettinger?
What is it?
Come in here a minute, will you?
Oh, now what? It's always something.
What do you want, Georgie?
This is Lieutenant Larkin.
I won't keep you long, Mrs. Ettinger. Just a couple of questions. Were you in all day?
The whole day.
Was Georgie in all day?
Yeah, sure, he was in.
You're positive?
I'm positive.
What makes you so positive?
What makes me so positive? I cleaned his room, that's what makes me so positive. And I pressed a suit for him later, that's what makes me so positive. And when I was sweeping the hall, his door was open and I saw him. How positive can you get?
You're prepared to swear to that in a court of law?
Go ahead, Mrs. Ettinger. Swear. Swear by your daughter's head.
I swear.
All right. Thank you. You can go.
Thanks, Lieutenant.
That's it then, Georgie.
Meaning?
Meaning your alibi stinks as far as I'm personally concerned. But for the record, it lets you off the hook.
You hate that, don't you? You'd like to hang the big one on me, wouldn't you? Yeah, who is it?
Lightning Delivery Service got a package for George Lennox.
Come in. Who is it from?
Mr. Moore. Mr. Julie Moore.
Julie?
Open it, Georgie. Go on. Go on, open it. I want to see what Julie sent you.
Well, okay. That's only a lollipop.
I never seen such a big one.
All right, who asked your opinion? Beat it. Go on, get out of here. What are you waiting for?
What do you think he's waiting for, Georgie? Stake the kid.
Stake him? What am I, the mint? You stake him.
Okay, Cheapskate, okay. Keep your lousy tip. Fine thing. I'm here twice this morning and three times this afternoon,
shut
and
up.
You're not in.
Shut
five
up.
Times up and down them stairs and not even a nickel.
Will you shut up?
Here you are, kid. Here's your tip.
Gee, thanks, Mac. A whole buck. Thanks.
Don't mention it, kid. You earned it.
Oh, thanks. I almost forgot. There's a message goes with the lollipop. To the biggest sucker in town from Julie. That's all there is to the message.
It's enough. Get your hat and coat, Georgie.
Robeson's production of Alibi Me by Third Jeffrey, adapted for Suspense by Walter Brown Newman. Supporting Mr. Freeburg in Alibi Me were Kathy Lewis, Geraldine Wall, Vic Perrin, Jerome Thor, Jack Crucian, Eddie Marr, and Dick Beals. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Stan Freeburg, starring in the April 20th, 1958 broadcast of Suspense in Alibi Me. That concludes this week's broadcast of Echoes of a Century. This program was an independent production by Doll Shoe Radio Creations, copyright 2006. Produced in the studios of WLSU La Crosse, an affiliate of Wisconsin Public Radio, on the La Crosse campus of the University of Wisconsin. I'm King David McKenzie. Thanks for listening. I hope that you will join us again at the same time next week. Until then, remember, fear and God do not inhabit the same space.